This is A Closer Look on 90.1 WABE. I'm Dennis O'Hare.
And I'm Rose Scott. You know, Dennis, on July 10th, 1978, Max Robertson joined ABC's World News Tonight. Here's Robertson anchoring an ABC News brief.
An ABC News brief brought to you by Anheuser-Busch. Now from Chicago, Max Robinson.
Good evening. Italian police say they've captured a prime suspect in the kidnapping and murder of former Premier Aldo Moro. The suspect is reputed to be the leader of the Red Brigade's terrorist group. It looks
like the Camp David with that old ticker tape machine sound effect in the background, or the teletype machine. Well, anyway, that was a serious story, though, the killing of Aldo Moro.
Yeah.
Max Robinson, who was reading that story, became the first African-American network news anchor. And while minorities have made strides, quite a few of them in the field of journalism, there is still a gap. And according to the Columbia Journalism Review, the Radio Television Digital News Association estimates that in 2014, minorities made up 13% of journalists in radio and 22.4% of journalists in television.
And Dennis, it also cited that overall, only 49% of minority graduates that specialize in print or broadcasting found a full-time job, compared to 66% of the white graduates. Now, those might be some staggering job placement figures, which many believe help explain the low number of minority journalists working today. We'll join a closer look to talk about the decline of minorities in the field from Morehouse College, Ron Thomas, who's director of the Journalism and Sports Program. And Ron, I've followed your career for a long time. We've known each other for a long time. First of all, thanks for coming in. But when you hear those numbers that I just talked about, is it surprising still?
Well, it's surprising in that, I'd say it's more mostly disappointing, you know, to find that there's such a wide gap in the percentages of minority students who graduate in journalism who get a full-time job. I think it's from 6 to 12 months after graduation compared to white students. I can't say it's surprising because it fits the pattern of the history of the industry.
Well, let's talk about the history of the industry as it relates to you. If you don't mind me asking, when you graduated and how long did it take you to find a job? Did you have one lined up after you graduated?
Actually, I had one lined up. I went to Northwestern for graduate school, and they had a lot of recruiters come. And I was just lucky. It turned out I had gone to University of Rochester as an undergraduate, and Gannett Corporation, which owned the paper there, was recruiting, and they had an opening for a sports writer to cover high school sports. And that was perfect for me, you know, as an entry-level reporter. And I'd taken a sports reporting class.
Let me ask you this. Were you the only person of color in that newsroom?
Not in the newsroom, but I certainly was the only one ever in the sports department. And it's interesting, even though I was hired for sports, but I think the first story, certainly significant story, they immediately had me work on a story about blacks in the suburbs because that was like a new thing, too, in Rochester.
You were the African-American correspondent.
Well,
for African-American issues.
Let's drop back a step here because I think what we're talking about is how people get into it in the first place and how they get hired. You went to Northwestern, which has a tremendous journalism program. Were there very few African-American classmates of yours at Northwestern?
You know, now in the graduate program, I'm not sure how many students we had, but we had three black classmates in the news part, and then we had one who was in advertising. But there were very few. And I think what sort of goes more to your point is when I worked at Rochester, I was the only black journalist in the sports department. When I took my next job at Chicago Daily News, I'm almost positive I was the first black sports writer they had full-time there. When I went from there to the San Francisco Chronicle, I was the first full-time black sports writer there. So as I've gone from one place to another, that's been the norm for me. And I think to a great degree for my colleagues, at least in sports, that's been the norm for them, or pretty close to it.
Because journalism school is obviously not the only way. It's one of those fields where you don't just have to go to a graduate school for that field to get into the field. So are we seeing if anyone, minority or not, comes from a school like Northwestern, they have an easier time? Whereas if somebody has great experience, is a good writer, knows what they're doing, that's where we see the gap between minority applicants and white applicants?
Well, the industry has changed tremendously. When I went to Chicago Daily News in 1975, I would say great majority of our staff, at least in my department, maybe had not even graduated from college. You know, journalism was one of those jobs where you could start out as what we used to call a copy boy, you know, just carrying papers and getting coffee, and you could start doing that when you were 16, and you'd work your way up as a reporter. Now, I was I think the early part of the generations where you were expected to have graduated from college. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the transitions. Certainly, if you go to a big name place like Northwestern or Columbia, you know, that gives you some leverage when you go job hunting.
But one thing we have seen change, albeit slowly, is that many of the folks making decisions, news directors, editors, etc., more of them now are either people of color or women than were in the past, although it's still a fairly small percentage. So why is it that we still see the gap as big as it is? Are we seeing just fewer people applying, people of color applying, so that even a news director who may happen to be African American has fewer folks to choose from?
You know, I thought one of the most interesting parts of a story that I know we were going to talk about is an article in the Columbia Journalism Review. And one of the most interesting statistics they had in there was that 21% of the students who graduate with journalism or communication majors are minorities. And this is covering from 2004 to 2013. Mm-hmm. So when you hear editors talk about the lack of minorities in their newsrooms, quite often they say, I can't find anybody. Mm-hmm. You know, where are they?
Where's the candidate pool?
Yeah. Right. But the candidate pool is right there. So I think the problem is not that there are not enough students who are out, people who are out there looking for the jobs. I think there are not enough people who are hiring them. And then that could be, I think there are combinations of reasons. One that comes to my mind that I think is really important, and two are networking and also doing sort of having extra commitment. But I think particularly networking, because everybody knows once you become a grown-up that, you know, getting a job isn't
necessary. I didn't know that many journalists were grown-ups.
You know, everyone knows that a lot of times jobs, who gets hired is not necessarily based on who's the most qualified. It's often who you know and who your friends are.
And that's a great segue, because we're talking about the decline of minorities in the journalism field. From Morehouse College, Ron Thomas, he's director of the Journalism and Sports Program. And joining us now, Stan Washington, editor-in-chief of the Atlanta Voice. And you talked about networking, and I'm going to sort of put him on the spot here, because Stan Washington, in my opinion, is one of the people in this market that's helped a lot of young people of color in this field. And Stan, first of all, welcome. We were talking the other day on the phone. The connection to how I got into radio, and then the people I worked with, you helped put them on the radio first in this market. You've been in this market a long time. Are you surprising when you hear that there's still this decline and there's such a big gap?
No. First of all, let me say I'm glad you didn't segue from decline to a declining journalist, Stan Washington. But no, I'm not surprised at all. When I also used to teach at Clark Atlanta University at the radio station there, and in that department, which was then Mass Comm Department. And at that time, the largest segment of the department was broadcasting. Mm-hmm. Second was journalism, newspaper. Third was public relation. Now I hear the number one segment is public relation. You know, journalism. I mean, broadcasting. And I don't even know if they even mention journalism print anymore, you know, because that has totally changed to something like digital. So it hasn't been surprising to me. And, you know, Ron made a very good point about networking. Every job I've ever had in this business has been through networking.
Mm-hmm. Same for me.
Every mm-hmm. job, and just from knowing people. And another issue to that in terms of the recruitment is what the colleges are going to are suffering right now. A lot of predominantly black HBCUs are retention. People get in the business a lot of times, and it's not as glamorous as they thought it was, or the hard work, or they don't want to leave a city like being in Atlanta. they don't want to move. When you're in this business starting your career, you have to move around if you want to move up.
You may start in Waterloo, Iowa as your first market. Now, I was fortunate enough because I finished up in Indianapolis with an internship, took a chance, moved to Atlanta, but I was also selling T-shirts. But I had to network, and I want to go back to that for a second because Dennis and I talk about this all the time, particularly for graduates of color. Mm-hmm. And this is my experience, and I'll tell you who told this to me, Robin Roberts. I had a conversation with her years ago, and she said, Rose, Atlanta's a great market, and there are a lot of people that can help you, but the key is to surround yourself with people that are willing to help you, and that is so important for kids of color who are coming out of college because they need to network with other journalists who are doing what they do. And Stan, we talk about it all the time. You know, you reach out, you look to the veterans, and I always say in this market, it was Carmen Burns, you know, Dennis O'Hara has been a mentor since I've been here. So, but for me, having someone like a Carmen Burns or a Reggie Hicks who was at Clark Atlanta, people of color helping me along the way, and I think that is a key to sort of also making sure these kids feel like they can get a job in this field.
Yeah, and to add to that, in terms of the networking, I've always said this, and this applies to you, whether you're just coming out of college or you've been in the business as long as I have. It's not only who you know, but who likes you. Mm-hmm. Because if they don't like you, they are not going to pass that information to you that this job is available or whatever.
So, Ron, what do you think the effect is, not just for journalists of color, but for all consumers of news, if we're still seeing a dearth of journalists of color, and particularly young folks coming along who might perhaps improve that pipeline, what's the effect on all of us as consumers of news?
You know, I think it's a shame that a lot of editors really, I think, have not embraced the fact that if you have a diversified staff, you have a better news product. And the reason for that is that, one, this goes back again to this networking, and I'm really talking partly about socializing. Mm-hmm. Just the way basically housing is segregated in this country, you know, if you are white and you work in a basically all-white work environment, probably most of your friends are going to be white also because, you know, you're going to probably live in a white neighborhood, predominantly white neighborhood, go to predominantly white church, et cetera. If you're black, you may work in an all-white, virtually all-white working environment, but a lot of times, a lot of your friends are going to be black. And therefore, you're going to have a wider network. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to just come across story ideas because, you know, of friends you run into, certain situations in your neighborhood. Certainly, if you're doing some story about the police, you know, knowing some black people and knowing how they view the police as opposed to how white people view the police, you know, that gives you a different story idea. And so I think a lot of editors really haven't totally accepted the fact that diversifying has great benefit for the product they're trying to produce.
And then, Stan, what is the solution to this? I mean, we have organizations that are specifically dedicated to not only making sure that folks who already have jobs, people of color, are represented, but they're devoted to bringing new folks along. What can organizations like, whether they're minority organizations like the National Association of Black Journalists, or even media organizations, even the Atlanta Press Club, for instance, and full disclosure, I'm a former president of that, what can they do to make sure that we get more folks who are really good into the pipeline?
It's going to go back to networking and building relationships. You have to, these organizations and the members, the board members and all of the members have to keep building relationships with these people who are running these newsrooms or even running these businesses. You know, I think one of the crises, one of the things that has hurt this business really a lot has been consolidation. There's been so much consolidation and I was thinking about on the way over here, the glory days when you had every radio station about had a news person, you know, so all those jobs are gone now and people are looking at the bottom line.
But did consolidation have a greater effect, greater proportionate effect on both journalists of color and minority outlets?
It had, yes, I think it did. It had a greater effect on it, but it had a definitely effect on the business in general. you know, the whole business of journalism and getting the news information out there. But I think building the relationships with these owners, presidents, these news directors, and getting them involved and getting young people early. My interest in journalism started very early because my parents read the newspaper every day and they watched Huntley and Brinkley mm-hmm. and Walter Cronkite, and I used to watch it with them. That's where my interest started. So you have to get them very early.
You know, when we were talking about, and Ron, you brought this up, in talking about that article from the Columbia Journalism Review, one of the other things it talked about was that it found that there was a lower percentage of students that were on the college newspapers involved. More were probably involved in college radio, where I did both, college newspaper and radio, but still I was the only person of color. And, of course, I did the jazz show for Indiana State, but you also saw a small percentage there. So does it, and even now in high school, it was even, was none and void.
You know, I think this is a very important point. I know when I went to University of Rochester, none of us were on the campus news, on the campus times, I think they called it. And we felt that it was sort of discriminatory. Now, I can't remember what the reason was, but none of us were on it. And so that's why I didn't get into journalism. That's partly why, until I went to Northwestern for grad school. But I think one of the things that would be important is this becomes a problem because when students try for that entry-level job or a high-end like the Atlanta Journal-Constitution in internship, they are looking for students who have a lot of experience on their campus newspaper and also who have gotten other internships. I think this problem partly could be solved with more black students going to black colleges and also news organizations recruiting more heavily at black colleges. The reason is, you know, if you're at a majority white school, let's say there are 20 leadership positions on the campus newspaper, mm-hmm. maybe three of them might go to black students, something like that. Just, you know, making sure there's diversity. Maybe five, okay. But if you come to my paper, the Maroon Tiger, and we have students from Morehouse, Spelman, and Clark Atlanta, if we have 20 management spots, they're all black students who get an opportunity to have leadership positions at that school.
But Ron, you also help implement this program at Morehouse College because you've helped sort of bring it full circle because it wasn't there before. And that's key as well, though, right?
Right. It didn't exist until 2007, and Spike Lee raised almost $1 million to start it, and I've been the only director. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've slowly built it up. We now have, I think, 48 students who are working in the media. We have 18 who've got master's degrees in journalism. And the other thing we've been able to do, we have a minor, we're not a major, but we've been able to add a couple courses. We're starting broadcast journalism this semester. Some of our students are involved in an investigative reporting consortium, and that's helped us too. One other thing I just want to mention about the students, they have a responsibility of making sure they show up. Like, I take my students to events a lot of times, and maybe they're optional, and I tell them, just show up. You know, you never know what'll happen. And one of our students went to an investigative reporting conference this summer. She just showed up. She got sort of matched herself with a professional who happens to work here, and now she has a mentor and an internship. And all she did was show up at the conference. So that's very important for students to do.
Just had a quick question that kind of touches on that, because a lot of folks, whether they are white or people of color, will look at particularly television because it's more visible, and they'll say, look, how can you say there are so many fewer folks of color getting in when the front line anchor positions are far more diverse than they've ever been? You look at a Lester Holt, who just got appointed as the anchor at NBC. You look even going back to Ed Bradley. And so these were front line folks. And you look at them and you say, oh, there are more folks of color in those big visibility spots. Doesn't that mean it's getting better all the way down the line?
And you know what, Dennis? You know, it took a long time.
Oh, I know. Right. No, but I mean, somebody's right. going to look at that and they'll say, what's the problem?
Well, this is particularly with sports because everyone looks at ESPN. Every kid in America wants to be on ESPN, mm-hmm. and there's such a large percentage of their anchors and personalities are African American. But the thing about ESPN, it totally warps the numbers. You know, if you take out ESPN and I'm just sort of making this up, but let's say 15% of anchors in sports reporting are African American. You take out ESPN, it's like maybe 4%. Mm-hmm. So that's deceptive, particularly with ESPN and sports reporting.
And Stan, I'll toss this to you, because when I graduated, there were three places people wanted to work: CNN, ESPN, or BET, because that's what we saw. That, right. That was visual, and Dennis is right. Right. And even growing up, the first woman of color I saw nationally was Jane Kennedy doing sports. And for me, that was, hey, I could do that, Dad. And he said, yes, you can. But it's been a long time between Jane Kennedy and Robin Roberts. That was a long gap.
And it's a long gap between Max Robinson and
Lester Holt. Sure.
A very long time. You know, when you look at solutions, I mean, the whole industry itself is being changed and affected. And even though when I was first, I'm in my third stint as editor of the Atlanta Voice, in my first 12 years, I had maybe, and I'm going to be generous with this estimate, maybe three young people to come to me and say they wanted to cover news, hard news. Mm-hmm. Everybody else wanted to do entertainment. Everyone wants to do entertainment and lifestyle stuff. Nobody wants to do the non-glamorous, hard stuff, you know. And people say, well, what's the issue? Well, a lot of times people don't look beyond the surface. Mm-hmm. Once you look beyond the surface and look at the hard numbers, you can see there's a big disparity.
Well, let's back up, guys. Let's talk about then, you talked about your parents' influence. You know, before I could watch The Jefferson, I had to watch 60 Minutes. Mm. After football on Sunday, you watch 60 Minutes. And Ed Bradley, you know, that was a factor for me. But, Stan, you're in print, and that's changed. And I want to get to that, because I'm curious as to, since now we don't even call it journalism. It's media. It's multi-platform. Everyone
content.
Wants, right. So
content producer.
Right. is that also, you think, a factor? And I'll throw this out to both of you in terms of the students saying, well, you know, they want you to do so much. And some, you know, you can start your own network in a sense now on the internet. Is that a factor, because how we deliver the news has changed?
I don't think that's a factor. So it's a factor for those of us who have been in the business for a while and who don't want to adapt and make those changes. You know, it's like, okay, well, let me get that buyout and get the heck out of here, because I don't want to learn nothing about no, you know, Instagram or Twitter or whatever. I want to go through all that. And I've heard my colleagues say that.
And I got to post this story.
Yeah, post this, right. You know, and I got to shoot it, you know. I've shot more video in the past 3 years than I've shot in my entire life, you know, being a print journalist now. You know, and I have, and that's part of the factor. And so a lot of us don't want to adapt. I just happen to be one of those people who like to learn, and I like to tell stories.
And you can keep a job that way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that's good advice for anybody.
Yeah. Well, I think an important thing about print is, you know, I do struggle sometimes. My students will shy away from print. And we are started as a print program. And because the word is newspapers are dying. Well, first of all, they're not dead. There are fewer newspapers, but there's still 1,400 newspapers.
Are they on life support?
No, well, I don't want to say that. Okay. They're just smaller, okay? But the thing is, even if a student is in a print-based program, still, no matter what you do, whether it's radio, whether it's TV, whether it's digital, you have to write well. You have to learn how to report. You have to learn how to interview people, how to gather information, organize it, prioritize it. And so even if you are in a print program, the writing is going to pay off for you no matter what area you end up in journalism. So I still think it's the foundation, you know. But now when students come out and they're looking for that entry-level job, people are really looking for you to have digital experience and know how to shoot and edit video, because you have to be able to do everything now.
And I think, right quickly, of going back to Dennis, I think it's for us in the business, it's upon all of us to keep encouraging the young people to come into this business.
Absolutely.